Welcome to Esoteric Modulation, episode 008, The Anatomy of a Live Modular System. Esoteric Modulation is your fortnightly podcast that covers all the wild and wonderful world of modular, exciting and unusual instruments, and we take a look into interesting sound and visual art projects too. I'm Ed Ball.
And I'm Ben Wilson. And I'm really looking forward to diving into my live modular setup and talking about other setups too for this particular episode.
Yeah, this is one that I'm really excited about, Ben, because I think on my early journey into modular, if I could have listened to something like this, you know, I would have got a lot out of it. You know, really complex stuff when you're just coming into modular, and even sort of when you're midway through modular and you've sorted your modules out, you know where you are, and then all of a sudden you think, well, I'd like to do something live. How do you put the right rig together for that? Again, these are just great nuggets of information for people, aren't they, Ben?
Yeah, I think so. And this case has come together for my second ever live performance. This was for an ambient modular performance to accompany a quite meditative yoga session at Deershed Festival. I did it last year and haven't done it again since, and then did it this year at the end of July. So it's only my second performance, but having put my kind of 10,000 hours in as a performer in other musical styles on different instruments, and of course, my 10,000 hours of learning modules. Yeah. I think there's quite a lot in there that have informed this, certainly more so than last year, to be quite a successful setup, at least for me to perform with.
Yeah, and it's just nice to sort of dig down, get into the weeds of things, isn't it? And hopefully give our listeners a few golden nuggets out there.
Yeah, it was like that with episode 4 of the show with Vlad from Soma Laboratory, just really digging into the engineering as a creative endeavour. It's nice to kind of jump off track a little bit and just pull focus.
Yeah, definitely. Keeps all our listeners on the toes, that's what I say.
Well, and us.
Yeah, very much so. Well, let's dig into it then, because I've been waiting for a while. I've listened to your audio from it. I've seen your case on Modular Grid. So can you give us, you know, an overview first then, Ben?
Yeah, so in this show, we've got, well, there's 7 audio examples that we'll listen to in little focus segments. But I will say, if anyone wants a high quality way to listen to this, I've hosted them on my Patreon page. Now, it's not behind a paywall in any way. It's just an open, public, free post. You don't have to sign up to listen. But the kind of full quality WAV files are up there, as well as an image of the case and the Modular Grid setup as well. So I'll start by just running through the kind of setup and the intention of it. It's a 12U case, 104 HP wide. It's my cosmic space case. And there's a kind of central hub to it, and then little zones that I'm kind of dotting between, little sub patches, little kind of instruments, as it were. It really kind of bases around the WMD performance mixer. Now, the mute expander's in there, which is a little extra module with some button muting for the channels. The reason for the performance mixer as well, I think faders over knobs. I don't think people have found the right inside the box modular mixing system just yet. But for this performance, because I'm not really mixing things on top of each other, kind of patches on top of each other, like you would have different instruments in a band, for example, I didn't really need the EQ of, say, the Bafaco.
Right.
I did need stereo channels. And the other advantage of the performance mixer in this case is there's a stereo, what's sometimes called the two bus or the kind of master section. There's a send and a return that just slots over the output section if you plug anything in. And that's the equivalent of, you know, an old SSL mixing console having the SSL bus compressor on the output section. And what that allowed me to do was have a whole chain of effects. I mean, there's a whole 104 HP row of effects on the output.
Yeah.
That is my output bus, as it were. The equivalent of, if you're staring into a DAW, dropping plugins and effects onto the master output section rather than on the channels. That kind of leads us into the effects chain. And as I say, it's a full 104 HP.
It's colossal, isn't it?
But we spoke about instruments as effects before. And there's a kind of it's not pre-imposed because it is all just on the output section, but I have a pre-imposed filter set of effects, if you like. There's a 2HP reverb just for a little splash of color. Mutable Instruments Clouds, doing some kind of 2-octave up, pitch-shifted granular stuff that you'll hear in these examples. The 4MSDLD, which is a really cool delay looper. We can link to videos of some of these in the show notes as well on esotericmodulation.com. Yeah. But that's all the clock delays, all the lovely kind of in-time looping kind of segments. You hear little reverse phrases coming in and out. And there before, the WMD Overseer, which is kind of like a DJ-style filter where it low passes to one side, high passes to the other.
Ah, right. I wonder what that did.
Yeah. And the reason for it being in there at the festival and the performance last year, I was with Milo Melodies and Alex said, it's all just a bit bright. You know, and this was the PA system, the tent that we were in. He said, for a chilled out thing, it's a little bit harsh. Have you not got a filter you can just put over everything? Uh-huh. And we went over to the desk and turned a load of treble down on the mixing desk, but this kind of shelving EQ of a mixer wasn't quite right. And there are moments in this setup where I needed just to shave high end off. And it also became a performance thing. So having effects before it meant I could have reverbs, delays, granular effects, and filter them out of the way. Kind of just push the frequencies down almost to nothing. And then after that, there's the Strymon Magneto, lovely tape delay emulation on that. And then the ZDSP from Tip Top Audio. I love that thing. With the Halls of Valhalla card, and I'm moving between different reverb algorithms from plates to cathedrals to Nilfheim and Asgard, all these big fake, huge sonic spaces that are on there. And they're not on all the time. I should say, you know, some of these are just entirely dry for certain examples. Some of them have been manipulated and that's the thing I'm performing with. Sometimes just a little splash of color. But those being after that filter, I mean, I can sweep down this stereo low pass to just this rumble. But then all content that was there trails through these delays and reverbs. And they're quite long. So for transition and performance, I can either filter down my effects and get them out of the way, or I can kind of perform filter moves and sweeps that then feed an effects chain. The other two things, or three things, that are kind of there all the time, Tuesday from This Is Not Rocket Science, which is my kind of central clock, rhythmic sequencer, pitch information, into Marbles from Mutable Instruments, which gives me a couple of random gates and a random quantized melody. And those two are really the only kind of sequencing I've got in the case. And then a buffered mult, which is just cloned from Steady State Fate. It's just a great, accurate buffered mult that just splits my clocks and pitch information.
Yeah.
And that's really the kind of central hub. Everything else is split into these different little zones that I kind of moved between as I was performing. The reason I went zonal was purely a time-based thing. I knew I had to play for around an hour at this performance. So my mind, for some reason, my gut reaction was, right, how am I going to split this time up? Much like how we plan the show. What do we want to talk about for 10 minutes and 20 minutes on this? And we'll talk about this album for 5 minutes or however. That's what I did with setting this up. So it's, what do I want to do as an intro? And how long do I want that to be? Okay, I want that to maybe only be 5 minutes just to get us going. What's that going to be? And then what's the next kind of 10 minutes? How's it going to transition between that and this? And I didn't really rehearse much. It was an improvised performance, but I really thought about it for a long time. And it was very time-based. And so attached to these kind of notes of 10 minutes of swooshing wave-like noises into 5 minutes of plucked delicate melodies into granular delays. I then want that to merge into some sample manipulation for 5 or 10 minutes, back out into some chordal drone. That was the thought process, and just attaching timings to them. Yeah. So it very naturally became this zoned thing. What is this kind of wave-like noise swoosh? What is this granular sample manipulation? What is the effects chain? Is there any either linking and transition in the effects, or even an instrument in the effects that I can get 5 minutes out of? And it's maybe a bit of a crude, almost boring way to look at it. Like, what's going to give me 10 minutes? What's going to give me 15 minutes? But it seemed to just work for me, and it kept it seemed to keep it interesting for me, interesting for the audience. And it felt very, I won't say safe, but it felt like a good environment to improvise within.
Before we get into the examples, I'd like to ask just a couple of questions just about that core of the system before we go on. So the effects chain, what sequence do the effects chain go within? And are you keeping that sequence throughout the show, or are you repatching the sequence of the effects chains?
None of it's repatched. The only thing I repatch was which Vault Proactive melodic thing came into what patch, which we can come to through the examples. I didn't repatch the effects at all. So it's the stereo send out of the performance mixer, first into the 2HP verb, which I was just thinking, there's a splash of color and ambience. Then into clouds, there's my granular capture, drones, layers, odd stuttering little kind of repitch stuff. It was all pretty much two octaves up on clouds, just this higher kind of little granular cloud, for want of a better word, that just kind of sang or sat on top of or underneath what was going on. Then the DLD from 4MS, which delay after reverb and granular maybe seems strange, but the way that works like a looper, once the feedback goes up to 100% and there's also a hold button or gate input, it is a looper. So I wanted to be able to loop and echo and move these effects in stereo with different timings, left and right, so they phase against each other. That then hits the filter, which is what I spoke about earlier, where I can then kind of carve all that down, low passing it, all that then into magneto, stereotape delay, loveliness. Any kind of spring-like verb is probably the spring emulation on magneto in any of these examples. And then the final big wash, which I thought I was going to just bathe in this ZDSP Halls of Valhalla. I didn't in the performance, and I haven't in these examples. It's all kind of under 50% wet. Right. So again, with that filtering before magneto and ZDSP, I could filter things out and have these long feedback trails going. I was definitely, both in these examples and live, rinsing that kind of runaway tape feedback on the magneto as much as I could. And just because it's such a slow meditative performance, and that's the intention of the case, I just wanted to do all that live. There's not that much modulation going on through a lot of it. There's little bits here and there, but riding feedback and that being the thing that I'm really intentfully listening to, that's kind of what I wanted to do. It became a performance that way because I wasn't the focus at that gig. There was a yoga session going on with an instructor with her mic, you know, louder than my audio through the PA. Yeah. So I wanted to kind of be really stuck in.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lovely chain. I just love the look of that. And obviously we'll hear how you've used it going forward. Brilliant. So shall we get into all the sounds then and start talking about those?
Yeah. So the first one is the kind of noise section, as it were. Very Suzanne Ciani inspired kind of wave-like noise swooshes.
Okay, well, we've just established there, it's not just noise, is it, Ben? I did think when I first listened to this, it sounded like an episode of Lost in Space. It's really got that eerie, spatial beautifulness about it, hasn't it?
That's great. I wanted to kind of link back to, you know, the early sci-fi soundtracks and very early kind of modular work. And of course, as I said, kind of leading in, Suzanne Ciani still often opens her sets with a Buchla fading in these kind of primitive wave-like sounds, just noise swooshing up and down. Yeah. So I'm glad it evokes that kind of lost in space feeling.
No, it did. It was beautiful. Those lovely resonant sweeps that you do within it, absolutely beautiful. How did you tame those? Because those, you know, obviously sometimes can get away from you, can't they?
Yeah, so the patch is, it's white noise, the steady state fake quantum rainbow, just white noise into the filter 8 from Geranalog. And it's the cubic contour, just cycling the cutoff up and down, me occasionally moving the filter itself. Yeah. But by cranking up the resonance, because that filter will self-oscillate, that becomes that sine wave sweep.
Right.
And although not so much in this example, but certainly live, I kept just pulling the input out, just remove the noise, crank the resonance, something else is going on, and just having this whoop into a ton of delay.
Lovely.
And it just works. I mean, it's like film trailer kind of stuff, isn't it? The pitch comes up into this transition, into this big effects chain. It's a really easy way of just kind of creating a kind of soundscape.
Yeah, it really amazed me, the soundstage that you've got. It's very 3D. The sound's moving all around, and you've got this sense of depth as well. And we talked about that in a few episodes back. But how did you achieve this in this particular circumstance?
Well, the first kind of additional layer is clouds. pitch shifting the whole thing up a couple of octaves. Almost sounds like a clanged, kind of struck spring reverb, a real mechanical spring. Some of those mechanical sounds are clouds, and what that's doing with these kind of short granular kind of live capture and process and pitch shifting it. Any stereo movement is the DLD from 4MS. Clocked at different times. It's not quite a ping pong, but something might be 3 times the clock rate, while something else is 7 or 5. Right. Odd numbers work really well for that kind of phasing, moving stereo image.
Yeah.
It's been tamed, although it is noise through a filter. That's the kind of sub-patch, that overseer. The stereo filter in my effects chain was being pulled in and out as well. Any kind of feedback trails will have been magneto. And just layering effects was where the kind of the depth came from, really.
I was going to say, because you got this front and back feel to it as well. Would that have been the Halls of Valhalla at the end, giving a bit of that spatial awareness?
Yeah, with a low mix. So it's not, you know, it's not in your face. Having that at, you know, the knob around 9 o'clock, so 25% wet, 30% wet, but a really big reverb. It just means that the background of the whole thing and the tone turned down as well, so it's not very present.
Yeah.
It just sits this stereo reverb. It's almost like standing in a puddle. You're not drowning in it, but you know your feet are wet.
Yeah.
Kind of. And not moving out of that puddle. Yeah. And then letting other effects feed into it that are more prominent or aren't.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with it, and I did keep moving back and forth from it. Because being noise-based, it's not tonal. It's a very easy thing to kind of swoosh and build a texture around anything else. Yeah, you could bounce between it very easily. Yeah. It descends into that kind of vinyl crackle sound, which again is the Quantum Rainbow, and it's the Quanta noise source, I think it's called.
Right.
And it's just these little blips. You know, it sounds like vinyl crackle.
Okay.
And even just that, into some granular shifting, some delay, some reverb. You can build an interesting texture. But having the two noise sources playing off each other, again, just lets me continue to swoosh stuff around, play around with what's prominent, have something just crackle away. I love vinyl crackle in hip-hop and, you know, sampled music. It's great.
Yeah. Is that much of the best to get that vinyl-y crackle out of?
There's a couple of things. There's a noise source from Hex Inverter that does a similar thing. And you could probably chop up another noise source with some kind of random... You could probably patch it, but I wouldn't want to use several modules to do it.
No.
Certainly not in a live case.
Yeah, just my last question, Ben, was that it had this sort of metallic sound in places to it, almost like it was going through a spring reverb. I think you've answered the question. Was that clouds, or did you bring any of the spring reverb of the Strymon into play on that?
Probably both. Me having said a minute or so back it was clouds, there were times where I pulled the spring up as well.
Yeah.
But it's very pitch. I mean, pitch shifting noise almost seems silly because noise is just certainly white noise, just broadband noise. There's nothing really to pitch shift. But certainly a lot of that character was clouds. And then, the moments where, for those that go listen to the kind of high quality version fully, there are moments of Magneto spring in there as well. That's very kind of boingy. They've done a good job of emulating the spring on that one. So talking about the spring on the Magneto nicely links us to the next example, which is the Make Noise Morphogene and the Magneto. And that's all that's used in this example. All the other effects chain is set to dry, nothing else going on. So let's check that out.
Beautiful, haunting piano, lovely sort of tape hiss effect. This is sort of the realms that I love. How did you put this together, Ben?
So that was just the Morphogene straight into the mixer dry, and then through this whole effects chain, as everything was, but only with the Magneto with any wet sound blended in. And that particular part, there is another little snippet of audio we'll edit into. This particular bit is mainly trying to show off Magneto. You can hear that this nice delay starts to come in, and then partway through the example, the tape age, crinkle, and the wow and flutter comes in, and that's where this kind of vibrato, like pitch drift, this warble and kind of uneasiness, it's almost a chorus in effect, comes into play. You do get the kind of octave shifts in the morphogene as well, as that phrase starts to repeat and kind of layer up on itself. You turn the morph up and it'll start to pitch shift its kind of grains as it goes. And then that nice kind of runaway tape kind of echo. I mean, the Magneto just does it so well. It just nails that sound, as you'd expect from Strymon, of course. He's really just trying to show off Magneto in that little bit. The next section focuses more on the morphogene, pitch changes, reversing, and kind of, again, more of these octave shifts.
Starting to get more complex and more dreamy and sort of broken up now, aren't we, in this section?
Well, it's just that the reason for having two kind of little examples of this patch, of course, Magneto, great module. I wanted to show off its kind of tape-like quality. Yeah. And live, I'm very much dipping in and out of that, how tape-aged and crinkly it is to my kind of hi-fi and normal delay like it is. But in this little bit, it's kind of the beauty of audio manipulation. You can't patch that on a synth, this slowing down and reversing of time, it just doesn't exist. Yeah. You mean you can pitch things, you can change envelope times and make a patch feel like it's slowed down. You could even kind of invert things and make it feel reverse. But yeah, just that beautiful world of audio manipulation. So all that was taking the pitch and time on the morphogene round into the reverse section and it being pitched down at the same time, again with that morph quite high. So those octaves and fifths, kind of granular pitch shifts that are trailing through the delay, are all coming from the morphogene as well. And again, it's just those two modules. That whole example is just the morphogene into the Magneto.
Yeah, I mean, these are two modules that I haven't got that I'm going to get, I want, because they seem to pair beautifully as well, don't they?
I think Magneto and anything. I mean, I did put the case together with those two next to each other when I started playing around. And I thought, just being able to have this runaway tape feedback should be on the output. I need to be able to feed anything into that. It felt like, although it's a great pairing, of course, they're still paired in the way that this system's patched.
Yeah,
I didn't want to just kind of almost box it off into its own little zone in the case and not use Magneto for the rest of the performance.
Yeah, definitely. No, so it's a great setup, that is, isn't it? And it's a lovely part of the movement, I suppose, because these are all movements going into another, aren't they, within this particular performance?
Yeah, I wonder if, you know, listening to these examples, it's maybe a bit self-serving and egotistical to say so, but I do wonder if there's an album in there almost where each sub-patch or zone is a track that I maybe think about a little bit more and how I perform with
it. Out.
Maybe it's a preview of a live show because I want it to be improvised, but yeah, there's maybe something in doing it. I do think these kind of idea of zones works really well.
Yeah.
The next one is very different. It's the 2HP vowel just droning away. It's an oscillator into the mixer, but then through this whole effects chain. One thing I'd like people to listen for in this one is this kind of upper granular crowd that serves as a second layer as the example plays. So that upper texture that I asked everyone to listen to was Mutable Instruments, Clouds. Now, that's a case of freezing the buffer on Clouds, so there's some sound fed in, and then just hitting freeze live with a button on the module. throughout the whole performance and all these examples, it's pitch shifted fully up, which is two octaves higher. And both with a dry wet on clouds and having the stereo filter after it in the effects chain means I can decide how prominent this pitch shifted granular cloud is, either with the dry wet and its general level on clouds itself, or by kind of shaving in and out the top end. And you hear that top end change as that filter moves.
2HP is splattered throughout your case, isn't it, here? And they're just so great, aren't they, for a, you know, a small profile, but they really nail a sound, don't they? I really love the 2HP stuff.
It just does a job really well. And here, all the movement of the vowel and the formant controls, the pitch never changes. I left that where it was.
Yeah.
It's all manual. Again, I could have thrown a lot of modulation at it, but because it's such a kind of spaced out, truly ambient in terms of not much going on performance, I didn't want to just sit and twiddle my thumbs while CV kind of took care of it. Yeah. I wanted to play that. So it's nice. I liked that I couldn't move the vowel and the formant knobs and reach over to move the filter or to move clouds or change a reverb depth control or length. It's quite nice to just kind of go, all right, well, I'll keep the vowel shifting as I bring this feedback up, or I'll move the formant while clouds is depth change. But they pack a punch, and the placement in the case was important for that, obviously them being small.
Yeah.
So I just kind of slotted it where it worked for me to be able to get to it.
Great small things that pack a punch. I love when it starts to go dark, you know, when you sort of knock out all that high end and it just goes dark. And I love that bit. I love the sort of, you know, the mood change of that.
Yeah, it works really well. It gets quite bright as an oscillator and a sound source, the vowel, and it can be a bit full on. This example definitely gets brighter in terms of letting more high end in than I did live. I don't think it being that bright in a tent doing yoga would have worked, so that the filter stayed a lot lower, a lot longer.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to bring it up so people could hear it. I mean, in a performance setting, very different to this, but all that high end coming in and then crashing into some drums or some rhythmic information, I think would work really well. It's definitely important in this setting to be able to shave that top end off.
Yeah, now talking about rhythmic information, the next bit we're going into the beat part of it with the Black Noir, aren't we?
Yeah, and this is, again, the Endorphins Black Noir. There's also the ADAC system T-Networks, just for an additional little tom sound. And that, again, plays through the whole kind of effects chain as the example goes.
Let's have a listen.
The nice thing with this example for me is these little bubbles of percussion that kind of randomly shift around the beat. I couldn't really hear those live because it was kind of thundering down with rain on this tent. The kind of subtlety of the thing was just washed out by just background noise. But these little bubbles, and again, this is clouds, unlike the previous example where I've got the density up very high. So the grains are being kind of seeded quickly and they form a kind of droning texture. This is turning that density right down. And what's nice with clouds is when the density is in the middle at 12 o'clock, it does nothing.
Yeah.
To the left, it will seed grains increasing in speed at regular intervals until it's a kind of full wash. But when you turn it to the right clockwise, they're randomly seeded, which is why all these little pops and kind of clicks are just kind of randomly shifting over, you know, a really basic beat otherwise. But I really like those little bubbles of percussion.
I love that. Right, I didn't know you got that particular sound with that. That's a lovely technique to know, because I love those little bubbling away clicks and bubbles. It really adds something to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, and again with this one, having chains and moments where effects are pre or post tone control and filtering, because Black Noir has a filter on it, it meant I could filter that in and therefore change what Cloud sees up front in terms of tone and harmonics. Yeah. And then, of course, having Overseer after it, kind of downstream on the effects chain, I can globally kind of control the top end in the mix.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Black Noir, because it's refreshingly different as a drum sound source, isn't it? Away from your 808, 909, that type of drum environment. It's just nice to hear something refreshingly different tonally, isn't it, with drums?
Yeah, I know they were very inspired by the likes of the CR78 from Roland. Going kind of a step or two back in drum machine history to a much more primitive kind of form of synthesis, really, to make percussion. But there's a real weight to the kick. The snare seems to have a real pop to it, a great punch. There's a moment in that example where I bring up the noise amount and then that noise kind of cascades through these delays. Yeah. But I mainly keep it down. It's punchy. It's got a good character kind of right out of the box. And the cymbals are very different. They're certainly not as punchy, but they just kind of pepper the top end over the kick and snare quite nicely. And yeah, it's different. I mean, it's very performable. If this was a much more kind of beat orientated, lively performance, being able to put a clock or a rhythm into it and then press and hold any of the buttons for that to replace the rhythm works really well. So you've got trigger ins for everything. You know, you patch all your triggers in, make your drum beat, maybe put a really fast clock into it. And then when you hold the snare button down, that fast clock replaces in as a fill. So it's very performable to just kind of get a little burst of something going.
So I'm guessing it's good for ratcheting and things like that if you just manually want to play that in.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be a steady clock. It's a clock input in terms of its label on the module. Right. But if you want to put this interrupted random burst or ratchet or anything in there, hold the button down and that's sent through to trigger, the sound. What that also does is that same clock input seeds a sample and hold to give you a random value. So it's quite nice for maybe throwing a steady clock in, different triggers to make the beat, but then having the sample and hold change maybe the noise character or the effects settings on the module. Again, wasn't doing that here. I wanted to play it all live, and it being so spaced out, I wanted to be busy and connected to the sound without it, voltages taking control. Yeah. And as I said before the example, the ADAC T-Networks is just a really simple additional tom. I just wanted one more low sound. I didn't want hi-hats or... So it's just a simple kind of bop sound. Plays nicely between the kind of space of the snare and the kick.
Was there any compression at all on that bass drum arm? I don't think you've got a compressor in there, have you?
No, there is one on the Black Noir. As one of the Dark Waves firmware for the effects, they built a compressor in, which does sound really good. But no, not at all.
Well, that's punchy, isn't it? Even for not even having compression on, it's a punchy drum then, bass drum, isn't it?
And it's a triangle wave at its core. I tend to patch a sine wave if I was going to make a bass drum myself. Yeah. But I just really like the sound and those little granular bubbles. It just gives you plenty to play with and plenty to hopefully get the audience, both on this show and that saw me live, to really focus on these subtle changes in the sound.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, talking about subtle changes, we're into chords mode next, aren't we?
Yeah, so there is some modulation on this. One thing I chose not to do by hand. The wavetable is the smooth random out of marbles. So smoothly, not stepped like sample and hold. It's just the wavetable's drifting up and down, just kind of freely doing its own thing. And it's quite nice to play with that, as you'll hear in the example, that it may drop down to just being sine waves. And that kind of informed how much of maybe an effect I brought in or out, because it maybe won't do much if there's not much harmonics to play with. Yeah. So it's quite reacting to smooth random as you go is quite an interesting thing.
Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
Well, I know we're doing this in two sections, Ben, but this first section, wow, you go through a lot in around about a minute and a half. Lots of textures, lots of different feels to it. And can you just run us through that?
I'll start just running through the modules. It makes more sense for what people want to look at. Yeah. It's the cubic chord, and up to this point, we're just listening to the mix output, which is all four oscillators, wavetable oscillators on the module playing the chord tone, just mixed down into the mixer. Yeah. And then I'm going through into the AGH next phase, which is that slow resonant phasing, and then the ZVEX lo-fi junkie. The lo-fi junkie came in first. Interestingly, the lo-fi junkie adds a ton of weight and level because it's so compressed as a processing chain. So that's one just to be careful of. You can't really crank the dry wet up, which I maybe did in this example just to try and get everything moving. But I was much slower moving with that live. Yeah. From there, that hits the Rabid Elephant natural gate, which is a low-pass gate. And then the Erica Synths Pico DSP on the end. None of this example uses that effects roll. You know, Clouds, right. Magneto, ZDSP, there's none of that in this example. Of course, live there was. I'm dipping in and out of playing with a kind of sub-patch, messing with the effects on top, trying to create these layers and textures.
Yeah.
But there's so much to go through. I just wanted this to be just that chain.
Yeah, it's really hard to dissect, isn't it, otherwise, because you've got so much going on. So you had a sub-small effects chain for the chords part then, really?
Yeah, and the reason I mention it going into the mixer, although it's the only thing, is the droning chord at this stage. There's multiple things out of this sub-patch. The mixer chooses what feeds everything downstream. And being able to bring in the kind of weight and warble of the lo-fi junkie, really nice kind of boards of Canada, like vibrato, and the compression works well for that too. It really squashes stuff down. Yeah. And then the next phase, it's just this gorgeous phase, and it's big. I mean, people have seen that AGH synth next phase and go, oh, it's just so big, but it's so lovely. Yeah. I mean, this whole case is massively indulgent in sound in a lot of ways. It's maybe not that economical space and price wise, but the next phase just oozes this character that I just kind of had to have in there. Yeah. And then the Rabid Gate, the thing that you hear towards the end of this example is you can leave it fully open with a fader up full, which is what most of this example is. But then pulling that down and having something strike, it's called the hit input. It will be called strike if it was a Make Noise module, but ping, strike, hit, pluck.
That's how you're getting the plucky effect towards the end.
Yeah, there's a decay control, and it models this kind of struck vactral decay. And that's really where you hear that Pico DSP shimmer.
Yes, as well. Really brings it in beautifully, doesn't it?
It's all mono up to that point too. So it's mono out of the, well, they're mono effects. It's mono out of the natural gate into the Pico DSP. And that gives this, it's almost like an auto pan on the granular delay. It just kind of shifts, certainly in headphones, between left and right really nicely.
Beautiful. Let's take it into the second half. It starts getting really interesting.
So this is a bit more complex to explain, but it's, the main point was to show this transition from this held chord to this arpeggiated chord. And that's why I use the mixer. So the cubic chord as a module has the output for the root, the third, the fifth, and the seventh intervals within that given four-note chord, as well as the mixed output. So all of the first bit that we focused on was just the mixed version. This then takes that root, third, fifth, and seventh into a sequential switch. So you put a clock into the switch, something to tell it when to change, and it's cycling between which one of those audio paths we're listening to. So the chord isn't changing. I'm not sequencing the chord module in any way. The only thing moving is the wavetable position, which is that random modulation that we spoke about. Yeah. And we're listening to the switch select between the root, the third, the fifth, the seventh. It's a Sputnik selector, is a particular switch. The reason for that one, rather than say the Dopfer A151, which is a great little switch, is this is a bit bigger, but it's got a random direction. So a bit like how on an arpeggiator on a keyboard you'd have up, down, random, up and down, all these different movements of arpeggiation, I can kind of do that on the Switch. It can move up through its four inputs, down through them, or randomly through them. And there's a button to do that as well as the clock input. So I can also blend on the mixer, which is that transition in this example, from the mixed chordal output being the thing that feeds this path through to the Switch output being the thing that comes in, which is why I can have a chord at a lower volume and an arpeggiator on top, or vice versa, or move between the two. And it just worked really well. I wanted an arpeggiator when I was putting this together. I thought I could just switch through the audio. And it's a little bit clicky. There are times when it's a more pure sine-like wave, which then reveals all of this kind of thing. Richer waves often mask any kind of clicks and things like that. You can hear it switching as it moves through those different notes in the chord. There's a little click or... But I didn't mind that. And I don't mind it certainly more so when it's going through an effects chain. Seems a bit more intentional when it echoes away.
That's right.
That's also a bad thing. If you didn't like it, that's really bad, because you're going to hear several echoes of it through an effects chain.
If you don't mind it adding to the texture. I mean, there is a part, isn't there, that the arpeggiation just seems like a raw analog synthesizer with nothing on, just raw and beasty. And then all of a sudden it gets lost in all this swell. And it's, again, it's sort of nice to have the contrast, isn't it?
Yeah, it works well. And then the second part, again, a little bit more complicated. The natural gate, which is either fully open, low pass gate, it's turned right up, the sound is droning through, or it's closed and it's been struck for those more percussive notes. The gate that feeds the striking of the low pass gate is from Marbles, but it's the it's the opposing gate output to the one that changes which input on the Switch is being used. There's a mode on Marbles based on a module called Branches, again from Mutable, and it's a coin toss module. So every time it receives a clock, it makes a decision as to whether that bit of information goes to the A or the B output, much like flipping a coin. Is it heads or is it tails? It's going to be one of them, but never both at the same time. Yeah. And you can weight that on a knob. Is it always going to come out of the left output, always the right? Is there a 50-50 chance of head or tails, or left and right output, or A and B output? So what happens is, as I bring the low pass gate down, you notice the rhythm, just a do-do-do-do-do-do, the steady kind of rhythm of this arpeggiation halts. Notes are being held a bit longer because I'm moving that probability around so that something might come through and strike that low pass gate. And that's a bit of an off-kilter way to kind of play, certainly play with the perception as an audience and as a performer, that this steady clocked rhythm is now being interrupted because I want to strike it, but due to how I've patched it, I can't strike this low-pass gate and change a note at the same time. But I like that. I like that it's this kind of off-kilter thing. It's still in time because it's just choosing which output it uses. It doesn't change the rhythm or the tempo at all. But that's quite an interesting way to play with things.
Yeah, it really does go through a lot of changes in character, doesn't it, with this particular module?
It does. And the sense, you notice it more so with the arpeggiation, but the sense of the chord changing is me manually moving the inversion control, which will push certain notes within this four voice chord up and down in octaves. And I'm just doing that live. There are moments listening to this example where I'm maybe not in time. It kind of shifts halfway through a clock or a note changing. But that's kind of hard to do because it's not a switch. It's not a button. It's not a mode change. It's just a smooth knob and pot on the module that has maybe 20 different inversions around the smooth turn of the knob. So that's all done live. Sometimes works, it's sometimes a bit off, but that's why it's live. It's quite fun.
Yeah, that's it. Which moves us on to our next section, which is the sixth section, Bell. I particularly like this one, Ben.
Yeah, same effects chain. So as we get into this kind of part of the example, this is the 2HP Bell into that mixer that I talked about, splitting the chord or the arpeggiated tone. Yeah. Then through the same kind of processing chain. No other effects.
Again, 2HP comes up. They're brilliant at these single source sounds. Let's take a listen to that. Well, Ben, I love this because it's got a beautiful, simple charm about it. And the sound of that 2HP has got this lovely sort of woody bell sound to it that I really like. I just, all in all, like this patch. Can you take us through it?
Yeah, it's funny you say woody for, I know what you mean, it's got that wooden, almost marimba-like quality.
Yeah.
But it's a bell. That's meant to be a metallic surface. But the bell as a module, it definitely has kind of, marimba, which is like a wooden xylophone, a xylophone, which is the one that maybe more people know, bells. It's got all of that kind of character in there. It just kind of oozes it. So again, that feeds the AGH next phase, which is that resonant swoosh that just kind of plays through it. And that really was there, and the reason I left the depth up, because I could have turned it down, is to keep some sense of something between the notes.
Yeah.
Space between the notes is very important, but just that hiss, that little swoosh coming through, just kind of, and it's quiet, it's not like it's anywhere near as loud as the main notes, it gives it some kind of texture. I hope that does come across through the podcast once it's kind of compressed through the podcast algorithms.
Yeah.
The granular delay on the Pico DSP from Erica Sims, I think, really shines in this example.
Yeah.
The way it kind of just shimmers and stutters left to right. And any kind of pitch warble is the ZVEX Lo-Fi Junkie. The speed was turned up quite a bit more than on chord. So it's less of a warble and more of a plain vibrato on a guitar, that kind of wobble of the finger on the string.
So we're sort of starting out fairly clean, aren't we? And then we're going into a more processed sort of sound. And is that you bringing just all that chain into it then?
Yeah, very much so. And playing with the level and tone a little bit through the low pass gate, just moving, because bringing that up and down, being a low pass gate rather than a VCA, it's not just level control. You are losing a little bit of top end as the volume comes down, which is why low pass gates sound so natural. If someone's talking to you and they start walking away, the kind of top end intelligibility goes, as well as level as the distance increases.
Yeah.
And that's quite nice. Again, a very kind of organic, real way to play with sound. And then, the kind of hiss and the swoosh and the wobble and the effects is that same chain, the next phase, the Lo-Fi Junkie and the Pico DSP. Yeah. We should maybe touch on the sequence as well. It's the Tuesday from This Is Not Rocket Science. It's an algorithmic sequencer. So you've no input as to what the notes are. It's all done based on algorithms, very cleverly programmed. That was deciding the gate pattern, the volt per octave, and I've got control over what they call X and Y and a density control. So it's almost like finding a position on a map, a melody that suits a certain style, if you like. You can modulate that live, you can play that live, and then the density allows me to carve out a pattern that plays on every step through to, one note every four bars, if you like. So it's a really nice way of kind of carving out how dense or busy a pattern is.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that module for myself, I think, just as something to be able to sort of set, forget, and have something sort of tinkling away in the background while, I'm sort of mangling on with all my other stuff. I think that'd be a really sort of nice addition to my set.
I think so, and it feels somewhat random, a bit like using a Turing machine, but again, kind of on steroids in how musically framed it is. You also get a gate output, an accent output, a velocity output, and a pitch output. So you've a lot of expression that's all relative to the pattern. And you can get back to it. It isn't random. You set the knobs in the same position to the same algorithm. It would be repeatable.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, fantastic little setup. And I love the sound of the 2HP bell as well. Which brings us nicely on to the next part, which is the rings.
Yeah, so I've used rings, like many people. Rings into clouds is now its own meme. I don't think I plugged... No, I did. There is rings into clouds. I was going to say I didn't do rings into clouds in this, but I definitely did. The main thing is rings into the cue pass.
Yeah.
The make noise cue pass. It retains that stereo image. And the resonance of the cue pass, it just works really well. Because rings can be so harmonically rich and quite sharp and transient at times, can be very bright. So having, again, a characterful stereo filter over it worked really well.
Yeah, this looks a brilliant inspired pairing as well. Do you think these two go really well?
They do. That's the one that I definitely keep kind of sub-patched up, even if they do come out of this live case at any point. Mm. Just to give myself a little shout out, even though the whole show's pretty much been about me, there's a DivKid Mutes module between them. Which
yes.
At times, the nice thing with the QPass, which does what the Bell does, and you'll hear a bit of that in the example that we fade into in a second, because it's got a stereo VCA, I can take Ring's output into it and then use some stepped information to control the dynamic level feeding the filter.
Right.
And that's quite nice, at pushing some sound into the background, pulling some up into the foreground, couple that with the filtering, and you're kind of off, which is what this example is.
Brilliant. Let's have a listen.
Two things specifically in that example that I wanted to focus on was the reverse delays, which is the 4MS DLD. It's all clocked in time with Marbles and Tuesday, so everything is in sync. It creates this nice kind of phasing. And the reason I think the reverse is kind of exciting as a listener is the complete opposite of what's happening with the actual voice. The voice is just struck, very percussive. Some of the notes drone, but it's been struck, an instant attack. Whereas a reverse is obviously the complete opposite. It's fading in,
right,
and sucking up. And I think that's why it works really well with this. The reverse wouldn't have made as much sense with, say, the chord patch.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing percussive and decaying so much. I mean, it would have worked nicely with the low pass gate coming down. But it's just, it opposes Rings very nicely. And then the other thing is, the pattern on Rings isn't changing that much in terms of melodic information, but the QPass is pretty rigidly modulating on every 16th note. So you end up with these held notes where you can hear this filter step. It's not all happening as a pitch change occurs. So you create this kind of two-way modulation where your modulation's not, it's in time in terms of it's all being on the same clock, but it isn't happening on every pitch change. And it does work really well. You can hear more of the VCA cutting in and out, and some more melodic shifting in this second example. I'd guide people to listen to how that melodic information changes in this second example.
Brilliant. Let's have a listen to this.
So this is where that melodic information starts to change. Previously, the Vop-Proctive information comes from Marbles, and that has its quantizing of its CV output set all the way up to the right, which is just in octaves. So there were occasional shifts in that first example, but not as much. So it's more of an example of the QPass, and it's kind of filtering. Here, as I bring that knob down, it goes from kind of full scale, any voltage available, up to octaves. And as I come down, it gives you octaves and fifths. then an arpeggio-like tone, a bit like what chord had, a root, third, fifth, and a seventh. And then below that, every note within a given scale. And there's just a couple of scale options on there, major and minor. So here is a change that, again, a bit like carving out the density on Tuesday, controlling the bell, 2HP example before this. It's a way of kind of carving out pitch information, but keeping it in key.
Right.
I really enjoy playing with live.
Yeah, a really nicely rounded case that is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the first time in a long time, and maybe it's because it was framed around this particular performance and it had to be, that I've had a case together where I don't want to change anything. I'm going to live with it for a while. As I said, I might make some kind of album, some videos. There's certainly more to come with this system.
That rounds it up really well. So I think we've got a wealth of information in there, Ben.
I hope so. I hope it's useful for people. And I do very much welcome feedback, whether people want to get in touch with me or us directly through esotericmodulation.com. Do leave us some comments and some thoughts. It'd be great to hear what people might swap out, what they like, what they don't like, either in the audio or the module choice. There may be better ways to do this. Someone might say, oh, you could have swapped that effect out for this, that blends really well, or a different performance approach. It'd be great to kind of get people going and talking about this kind of thing.
Yeah, fantastic. I've really enjoyed today. And for me personally, I know we get to talk regularly, but I love just talking modules and digging in and asking you questions about all of those. So it's just been fantastic for me today. And this is why I started the podcast, just so I can reach you with information, Ben.
Well, I'm well aware I talk a lot and a lot of content goes online with me on, but it's an interesting kind of change for this curated live approach as opposed to just a single module pulling focus for me.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice, isn't it? Well, that wraps that part up. Have you got anything to talk about, Ben? Up and coming things that are happening with you or?
Just a couple of little bits I'd like to shout out. It was a few weeks ago by the time this goes online and neither of us were involved, but I think it's a very positive thing. I just wanted to shout out Mick and other members at the Native Instruments team that organised the Creator Base event. They flew in a lot of creators and beat makers, of course, ones that use Native Instruments stuff, which is why we're not really there. But just this idea of companies supporting their communities and bringing people together, I think it's a very positive thing. It's kind of mutually beneficial for everyone. And it's nice to see, a bit like the Toman Symphoreactor event that I was involved with. That's very positive for everyone, I feel. And kind of thumbs up to Native Instruments for doing that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's great to have support. And we've talked about this in the past, haven't we, Ben, that companies that are just good companies, and like we cited Novation, didn't we? They're just the support they give to all their instruments and to the people that use their instruments with releases, and they just seem really good companies. And I think it's really nice to mention those type of companies, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. They deserve a shout out. And again, we weren't involved with that Native Instruments event at all, but it made me very happy. I sent them a nice message, actually, just to kind of say how good of a thing I think that is. Very positive for everyone. Other things from me, there'll be some more exclusive kind of patch breakdowns and possibly some live streams on my Patreon, which is patreon.com/divkid. By this point, I'll have been at the Barcelona Modular event. I've not actually been at the time of recording, but I'm sure it will be very, very good. What about you, Ed? Anything you want to discuss?
Yeah, just I'm starting up my YouTube channel again. It's been a bit of a weird relationship, really. I started a few years ago with trying to do sort of like a Casey Neistat style in the day of an artist type of thing. And boy, geez, that, you know, I don't know how Casey Neistat does it. You know, this is a guy, if you don't know, I'm sure you do, on YouTube that literally chronicled every day and put a podcast out every day. All well shot, all beautiful, all very good, all had the stuff. Story. Ain't got a clue how he did it because I found it hard just to do one a week. So that sort of dwindled by over around about, so I think I did six of those. And then not so long back, I thought about just doing a live stream because I wouldn't have to do the editing side of that. It's just live stream up, talk about what I'm doing art-wise, music-wise, and that was it, which was really good because I could do it on my iPhone and I just put the iPhone up. It's a good camera on. Put the microphone into it, decent audio, did it. Thought, oh yeah, that's great. That's really easy to do. You know, and I can talk to people about what I'm doing. And then the next week when I went to go live on it because I was doing these as live streams. I found out you need 500 subscribers or 1,000 or something like that. YouTube had changed their T's and C's to be able to stream live over your phone. So then I had to do it on my computer. So I thought, right, okay, let's just take stock because I wasn't too sure where I wanted to go as well with the content that I was going to put up on YouTube. But from this show has really informed me. And I thought what I would start doing is the week after this show goes live, I will do a show probably around about 30 minutes or so on YouTube. And it would just chronicle one of my projects of art and music that would bring them both together, something that may be interesting for people to watch. The first one is one that I'm doing for Eventide, which is I'm just taking a Eventide space and using that as a sound source. Of course, we all know, you know, there's no sound that comes out of space, but I'm putting that into a Ditto looper and using just feedback paths to excite the space and to build a soundscape out of that, then just layering and layering on the looper. And then once I've got the soundscape from that, then I'm going to paint to that, and that's the painting that will be going to Eventide. So I thought that would be nice to sort of chronicle that in the first of these new YouTube shows that I'm going to do. It'll probably go over two shows, that one will. One, I'm going to show people how I've done the feedback loop with the Eventide space, and then probably the other one will be about, you know, how I decided to sort of choose colours, what mediums to do, and how I painted that. So yeah, if anyone's interested in that, pop along to YouTube and subscribe. I will just say that if you put Ed Ball Artist in there, you will get me come up. There's actually another musician called Ed Ball, so don't confuse me with him. We're easy to distinguish. Ed's got no hair and I've got hair. So if you do find any Ed Ball videos with no hair, that's not me. I've always had hair. Or I'll put a link, obviously, in the show notes. So yeah, go over there if that's something that you're interested in. Yeah, please subscribe to my channel.
Yeah, so as you just said, we need everyone to go subscribe to that so you can live stream much easier from your phone again. And people should go back and watch those original videos. They were a ton of work, but they were interesting. As you said, it was kind of a day in the life of an artist. And all those shots of, you know, you're getting a painting out of the boot of the car, but the camera's already set up in the boot as it opens. And all those lovely kind of cinematic type shots that I know must have just taken, God, 50 plus hours to put the damn video together. It's a hideous workload, but it looked great. It's a shame we didn't enough time for us all to kind of go to that level of production.
I do love things that, you know, look beautiful stylistically, but as you say, they just take time, don't they?
It's a nice little body of work though. It's well worth people going back and watching. There's a few things I'd like to shout out. Certainly our Seattle group of friends, Sir Tim Held of Podular Modcast. I've been enjoying and caught up with PodMod recently, and Tim may make an appearance on a future show as well. He's got some music and an album coming out. Issue 2 of Waveform magazine from Ellis and Wolf is coming together and being released very soon as well. That's free shipped in the US as well, so people should go get Waveform magazine if they haven't checked it out. And of course, Kyle Swisher's Source of Uncertainty book club podcast. I'm looking forward to seeing how that show develops as it goes on over the months. And finally, Patchworks. I speak to Cindy at Patchworks quite a lot, certainly around me getting over there for the Velocity Seattle event, which is in October. And they're just super supportive. I love it when the shops, you know, shops and retailers are often looked at as the bad guys. You think of, oh God, I'm not interested in the guy that's trying to sell me the stuff. I want to talk to the artist or the designer. But really, shops like Patchworks, and we're blessed with a few in the UK like that as well, they really are part of the scene and they're so supportive for everyone out there. They're well worth a shout out. And as well as everyone in Seattle, I'd really like to thank everyone at Synthtopia. They've been sharing the shows recently without us asking, which is always nice. It's nice to think we're something decent worth sharing without a prompt from us. But they've been sharing a few episodes recently as soon as they come out, and it really is a big kind of natural bump in the listens and the stats. So if you've come over from Synthtopia, let us know. That's always nice. And thanks to them for continuing to share the podcast.
I'd like to give a quick shout out to all the people that have kindly reviewed us on iTunes. We have a few up there now, and it's really, really nice of people to take the time out to actually put a review on iTunes. So a big thank you to all those people out there. And if you are on iTunes, if you could give us a review, that would be absolutely fantastic. If you'd like to listen to our podcast with detailed show notes, please head over to our website at www.esotericmodulation.com. And over there, we've got a monthly newsletter that you can subscribe for there. We've had a few people sign up for that, and we're hoping to get the first newsletter out over the next couple of weeks.
We've also got Instagram and Facebook as Esoteric Modulation. I think Instagram's fast becoming kind of my favourite place to share and interact.
Yeah,
so that's a good place to catch us if people wish.
Yeah, well, I think that rounds it all up, Ben. I've really enjoyed this show. Thanks for doing this. Thank you for letting me pick your brains about it all. And I hope that's given our listeners something a little bit different to listen to.
Yeah, it's nice that you say you asked me to do it and thanked me to do it. It wasn't a vain attempt to talk about myself and my case for over an hour. Although it's a pleasure to do so. So as I said, if people want to get in touch, do so. It's great to talk about this. The examples will be linked in the show notes at higher quality that you can go grab and listen to. And we'll see everyone next time.
Yeah, see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.